Hello, Green Chatters. Welcome to another episode on the Green Living Chat podcast. My name is David Owusu-Mensah, and today I'm here with Dr. Daniel Fifi Hagen. And in this episode, we are unfolding our new segment on this podcast, The New Paradigms of Education.
As we promised at the end of the last season, we are starting off something called The New Paradigms in Education, which is being blended with our research stories segment. And here we are taking a very new turn to talk about life after school. What's next after school? Now, to do this, we have invited three amazing women who are going to share with us their stories, their experiences, and their advice. We can't wait for you to listen to them.
Yes, Daniel. So we have with us Florentine Ajua Ansan Asa, who is currently the program's lead at Edify Ghana, an international NGO established to improve and expand sustainable Christ-centered education globally. Florentine holds a Master of Education degree in Economics of Education and Management and is fluent in English, French, Spanish, and Chinese. Oh boy, it's going to get interesting today. We have with us also Lois Ifwa Ochiwa Damte. Lois is currently a final year PhD researcher in the Department of Engineering and Innovation at the Open University. She is the director of Sankofa Mentorship Hub at Synergies Institute and the secretary for Vocation Initiatives in Science Africa. Both NGOs are actively focused on the use of innovative and fun activities to advocate for STEM education. And last but not least, we have Dr. Juliet Ahimen Intiamua. Juliet is an environmental engineer whose work focuses on water and energy nexus. She is the founding president of GRASAC USA and devotes part of her time to helping students, particularly young women, STEM, to achieve their academic and professional goals. Yes, but before we dive into what we talked about in this conversation, I want to let you know that this conversation is going to come to you in two parts. So in part one, Daniel, let us know what we discussed.
Wow. Well, in the first part of our conversation, we dig into how society affects our choices of what we study in school and the kinds of careers that we consider. And we see how it is necessary for us to break away from some monotonies or some helpful tips that we can use to break away from these monotonies, as well as even helping other up-and-coming future generations. We also talk about how family and the university setups influence these decisions that we make. And we are very excited about some of the things that you're going to hear and how you're going to learn from them.
Well, if you're ready, my coffee is ready. Let's dive into the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very exciting episode of the Green Living Chats podcast. Today's episode is very unique because today is the first episode of our new program called Paradigms in Education, or New Paradigms in Education. And we want to sort of discuss how we can prepare ourselves better for what is beyond school. We know that a lot of us are students, a lot of the listeners are students, and some of you have questions about what you could do with your with what you're studying and what are the prospects available to you. As much as we are interested in what we are studying in school, we are also very interested in what would happen after. How do we translate what we do in school into after schools? So to do this, today we have three brilliant speakers, and we're just going to have them introduce themselves, and we're going to get to know about them, and they are going to encourage you. So we are very excited. David and I are very excited about this. David, are you excited about this as much as I?
You have no idea. I've just been waiting for those dates to come. So yeah, let's dive into it. I really can't wait to hear what they have to share.
We have Florentine, we have Juliet, and we have Lois. And I know I'm just mentioning their names sort of informally, because that's how we do it here. but I'm going to give them the chance to introduce themselves and to tell us about themselves. Okay, there's a reason why we have chosen them, because they are just outstanding. And so we'll just have them introduce themselves briefly, where they are and what you're doing. So first of all, welcome to the GLC podcast, Juliet, Florentine and Lois. Welcome. We want to hear your voice and just want to hear you say some shout outs to someone.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for coming. So we on my screen here, I have Juliet, Florentine and Lois. So that's how I'm going to go. So we're going to begin with Juliet. You're going to tell us about yourself and then we move to Florentine and then to Lois. Yeah.
Hi, listeners. Dr. Juliet Ohimen Ntiamua, but you can call me Onji. That is an acronym of all my names. So O for Ohimen, N for Ntiamua, J for Juliet. And I added Y to it to make it sound nice. So you can call me Onji. I finished my undergrad in KNUSD and moved on to the United States to do my PhD in civil and environmental engineering. I completed in 2020 and have been working as a wastewater process engineer at Jacobs Engineering Group here in the United States. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Florentine.
Hi, I'm Florentine Ajoa Ansari. I completed my master's in economics of education and management in China, at Central China Normal University. And I'm currently program lead impact assessments with Edify. And Edify is an international Christian organization. We work with low fee Christian private schools. So currently that's what I am doing. And nice to be here to meet all of you.
Thank you so much, Florentine. And then we have Lois.
Hello, everyone listening. So like they said, my name is Lois. The British likes to call me Lois. So sometimes it gets right into my head, but however you know it. So I'm currently a third year PhD student studying materials engineering, focusing on a subject called nanoscale and surface engineering and for wastewater treatment, something closely related to what Dr. Onji said. So I finished my undergraduate in the University of Ghana, Lagos, moved on to do a joint master's program, which earned me an MEng in Aston University in Birmingham, where I studied biofuels and catalysis, then went back to do an MPhil in Ghana, University of Ghana again. And intermittently within that, I've been up and running a lot of non-governmental organizations that help in SDG4 education. And so I'm very passionate about this topic that we are having to speak about. So I started my PhD somewhere in 2019, and little by little, we are moving there. Yeah.
Fantastic. Wow. We are in the presence of three amazing people. So thank you so much for saying yes to us, Onji and Florentine and Lois. We are so happy to have you. David, what do you want them to tell us about themselves? We are not satisfied. We want to hear more.
Yeah, so I mean, right on in the statistics of our podcast, we see that lots of people who listen to us are the youth, right, within the age of 18 and 30, all across over 80 countries around the world. And it's very exciting that we get to see people like you who are making an impact in the world, right? But the question that people ask themselves, that how did you get there? Were you like the normal children that we knew? Did you also, like, you know, have parents who were like keeping you away from doing things that you wanted to do? Or what are some of the things that, you know, took you along the way when you were growing? So we're always interested in your childhood experience. So maybe I'll start with Lois. How was it for you? What are some of the things that you can remember from your childhood? Is there something significant that actually draws you to that, oh, I wanted to learn I wanted to do nanotechnology. I wanted to go to Open University. Is there something that really triggered that when you were growing up? And what can you tell a young girl, a young youth person in Ghana or maybe somewhere around the world?
Not at all. Not at all. I never had an envisaged map on how far I was going to come. So we say all these things and these conversations always help us to draw our minds back on how far we are coming from. Because like I was saying, little by little, you don't get to see what you're building until you're done with the building. You see, wow, this looks amazing. So growing up, I've always battled. I grew up with a single parent, which is my mom. And so, I mean, coming from a very honest background where your parents never had first-hand education and trying to push through and living in a community. I don't know whether anyone on our podcast, if you live in Ghana, Nima Mamubi Pig Farm is a heavily dominated non-educational community. So having to go to school every day, you get to even be the laughing stock in the community that quote and unquote, I speak to you every day. That means that every day you're going to school. People as young as that, I mean, saw us, were giving birth and stuff like that. And that was the norm. That was the normal, you know, having to give birth at that age and be able to send somebody to go run an errand for you. So you doing something else apart from what the norm is, you tend to become a social outcast in that community. And I'll continue to say that in that community specific, because it might not apply to everybody. A lot of people might relate to that. So, I mean, I always wanted to be the best I could. And I remember many times when my daddy comes around, he's somebody with a plan, always have a plan. And it's very hard to pin me to having a plan. Even us at this age, I always try to be the best I could. And I think Onji knows that. She tries to make me do certain things at that particular time. But I'm always moving with the flow as much as possible. So I always try to be the best I could in every position I find myself to maximize my effort, because I knew that that is my selling point and that's what will make me who I am. I think I've answered the question.
Yeah, I mean, things are popping up. I really can't wait to hear what the others have to say, but I'm getting the vibe of community, you know, doing the best that I can. And sort of there is a norm. That word you mentioned in there is going to bring a lot of issues in this conversation. But let's get to Juliet. How was it? Is it any different from yours? Did your community accept you? Did your parents hold your hands like, hey, go to school, take you into music classes? Did you have it that good?
Is there anybody, well, I would say very few people in Ghana, you know, will grow up in that DB kind of environment where you get to go to music school or stuff like that.
Hello there, this is David from Post Production. So Juliet made mention of DB, which is an abbreviation for daddy's boy. It's a common phrase that is used in Ghana just to refer to kids whose parents are very rich. So just want to clarify that before we dive into it again. Now back into the conversation.
But anyway,
Daniel is here who would disagree.
Okay. So I think my background or my formative years were not maybe so different from what Lois has described. But mine was a mix of, you know, very interesting twists and turns. So let's say my first 5 years, I was staying with my mom and dad in our village, Asantachi Mubugu. And at the time, my eldest sister on my mom's side was staying in Accra. So she came to the village one day and said, Mami Fakos in Kwa Crown Kosnam in Chinunko School.
Hello there. This is David from Post Production. So all that Juliet said is from our local Ghanaian language. All she meant was that Juliet's sister requested to take her to Accra, which is the capital city of Ghana, to go schooling. Now let's get back into the conversation.
And I would say that my eldest sister, we don't share the same fathers, but you know, Asantes, we count more of our siblings on our mom's side. We are matrilineal. So I always or will normally refer to her as my elder sister because she's the first one of my mom. She finished, let's say, junior high school. There are times they didn't call it junior high school, but let's say something similar to GHS, but didn't have the opportunity to even go to secondary school. But she loved education. I mean, her sewing machine that was bought for her stayed in the house for 6 months and she was crying every day because she wanted to get just secondary education. Uh-huh. And she was not given. So she having that dream and not being able to achieve that, I think when she saw that, you know, I was just 5 years and all of that, she thought about the future and wanted me to have it. So she convinced my dad that, you know, she should bring me to Accra for me to go to school. And I'm thankful that my dad also liked education at the time. So that also helped. So I came to Accra, stayed with my sister. And, you know, she put me in a very good school, St. Anthony's in Dansoman. At that time, it was one of the, Cheche Kule was there. So it was like a DB school. fortunately, unfortunately, my sister traveled outside and, you know, after a year or two, so I was passed on to another person. So I would say between primary one and primary six, I stayed with different people. Multiple people. I'll not go into the details of it because I think it'll drag, but I stayed with different people. And by primary six, going to GHS one, my dad had passed and my mom had moved to Accra. And, you know, that was when I started, let's say, staying with my mom again. But between then, whenever we vacated, I'll go to our village and, you know, have time with my mom and that. And those times were my best times because that was when I get to really feel at home, because in Accra, it was like, you know, with different people staying with people, you have to watch yourself. And I was at that age, you know, so I didn't have that, let's say, ambient environment to study. But I'm grateful to God that even at that age, I had this strong self-motivation. I don't know where it, you know, it came from, but I just had this big vision that I wanted to do something big with my life. So that was how growing up was. I stayed with a bunch of people and my education was more like in my own hands. If I'm studying to be first in class, it's because I wanted it. And it's because, you know, when I go to my village and show it to my mom or dad, they'll be happy and, you know, stuff like that. But it was also in communities like Dakuman and, you know, people are not so enthused about school, similar to what Lois has described already. So it was me taking my education into my own hands and saying that I'm learning hard because I want to move forward. But I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I just knew that I wanted to be better than where I found myself. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, here I'm also getting a vibe of, you know, transition in life and parental and family support. And what I love about this also is self-motivation. I think a lot of people might relate to this, but a lot of people might also be struggling with this. I would like to follow up later. There's a lot of follow-up to do. I'm sure Daniel is burning in his, in his seat, but I think a lot of people are struggling with self-motivation. And I don't know if you would like to talk a little bit about how, you know, what triggered that self-motivation. But before we get into that, Florentine, can you tell us about your childhood growing up? Is it any different from what has been shared? Or you had the music class stuff?
Oh, please. If you saw me, I kept nodding and smiling at Juliet's words because I kind of identified with her at some point in her life. Well, my life, I was born in Ivory Coast. So my parents are missionaries in Ivory Coast. They are Ghanaians anyway. But so by the time we were five, my dad had to further his studies in Nigeria. So we moved to Nigeria. And then I started school there. So my childhood up to class six when the riots began in Nigeria. Abiola was in power and all that. So my dad had also completed school and felt that, okay, it's time to go back to Ivory Coast. And he felt that we had advanced in our education. So my big brother and I should come and continue our studies in Ghana because, you know, we are also Ghanaians. So we should have a connection with our... So, well, a little bit when we were in Nigeria, it was more of you wake up, you eat a heavy meal, and then you go to school and you stay through hours of the day in school and you just learn. I mean, I have parents who are very passionate about education, and my dad loves school. He's, as I speak to you, he's finishing a PhD and he's thinking of another one. And my mom could not continue her education because her dad passed away. And so at the time that the coup d'etat happened in Ghana, she moved to Ivory Coast, and that was where they met, and then they got married. And my dad had just gone there. So my mom had always wanted to be a nurse. So she still has this passion about school in her. And my mom is very good in math. So she used to be the one teaching us the maths at home. So it was just like education for us at home. You just go to school, you come back, and it was the word of God. And my dad was very particular about the fact that we were pastor's children. He never sacrificed his family for other things. He felt that if he fails with his family, then there was no point leading a church. So because of that, you can imagine that it was really strict and all that. So when the family moved back to Ivory Coast, my big brother and I came to Ghana, and we went to live with a family friend. So that was where I said, I really feel like I know what Juliet has gone through. So between class six, all the way to let's say first year, second year university, I was living with different kinds of people. I mean, moving from one home to the other, and we'll spare you the details because it's a whole life experience. And I think that from the time we moved to Ghana, that was where my independence began. And I learned to live by myself. I learned to take decisions by myself. I learned to, you know, people see you and they say you're a very strong woman, but it came from several years of hard choices to be made and different challenges to overcome. And so I just like Juliet, if I had to study to pass, it was just because I really had a big vision that I really want to be a big person after I've overcome all the challenges in life. And I never allowed my circumstances to really influence whatever I had as a picture in my mind. I always say I have this favorite scripture in the Bible. It says that, and it came to pass. Because I believe that everything comes to pass. So I kept going on and going on. So my childhood basically has been like that. It's from one house to the other with all the issues and all the stories, and you move from here and then God provides another place to stay. Even though my parents are Ghanaians, we don't really have family, if I should put it that way. My father's side, there were two, and his younger brother passed very early in life, so he's basically alone. My mother's side, she has sisters, but, you know, because of some issues, family is detached. So we don't really have family. So it's been family, friends, my parents' acquaintances, living from people you call aunties and uncles, and moving from here and there. Sometimes the treatments are good, sometimes they are not really good. And all these things, I always saw it as a learning point. And I felt that it was not the end of the road. I always saw it as something that was really making, contributing to making you who you really have to be. So, yeah, I think I'll end here because if I have to say everything, I'm not sure I'll leave here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Daniel, are you picking up anything?
There's so many powerful stories we are hearing. So wow. There's this statement that Lois made, which is connecting the dots, you know. And I'm just thinking about that because this is going to get into the next thing we're going to think about. I remember that when I when I came to China, my first year was language, and getting to the end of it, you did a Chinese language for 1 year, and then the first year, and then next year you're going to study your course, and anyone who has gone through that knows that it's not realistic, right? But I remember sort of like towards the end of, or the middle of the end of my first semester, I was about to give up. I was actually preparing to send a message to my mom to say, I can't do it anymore. I'm coming home. And because it was just crazy difficult. You know, I was doing well in Ghana when I was in Tekken, but then I had come here and I was just struggling. And then I remember I watched a video. It was two speeches, one by Bill Gates and one by Steve Jobs. And they were actually telling the same thing, reflecting back on their lives and saying, I didn't know this and that that I did would later on, you know, feed back into my life in this way. And so at that moment, I said, you know something, maybe these experiences are just going to make me better. And so I scratched the message I was going to send to my mom, and then I went through. So I'm just thinking about this, and I just want to see how your backgrounds, you know, were there points in your lives, in your early lives, that sort of you think you can link where you are today, you know, to those points. Especially now that we are thinking about education, you know, some of the things that you are studying. Lois said she's doing what, surface something technology. I'm so sorry. I got lost in that.
Don't worry. Sometimes I get lost myself, so don't worry. Nanoscale and surface engineering. So it's engineering at nanoscale. Yeah.
Wow. When she said that, I was thinking of surface tension, like mosquitoes. But anyway, I'm just thinking, you know, some of why did you, or sort of what led to you coming to study these things? This is where we want to look at what led to you coming to study these things. And please feel free to throw in your challenges. More especially, I like to talk about dreams that died sometimes, because, you know, this is, I know I have my own. There were some dreams that died and some were resurrected. And so we want to hear from you, you know, through your experiences. How do you connect the dots now when you look back? And what are some of the dreams that died? And what are some of the dreams that, you know, surprised you? So Lois.
Okay, let me hop in. So if you're sampling a number of 10 people, 8 people will know me because I love to dance. In University of Ghana, we used to go for street dancing and to hype a product or a brand, but most especially, it was for Christian events. So one of the strong reformations of choreography dancing and whatnot in Presbyterian Union back in Legon began from probably our time, because people didn't understand the ministry of dance, quote unquote, of arts, or how arts is a powerful tool to tell a story. That you can be saying one thing, but an art performance can summarize everything and a message can be taken across. So, like I said, 8 people, if you take 10 people, 8 people will know me for dancing. And I used to love it so much. It was an expression of joy and peace. And so in every effect, every engineer you would meet on campus should be having probably a T-square and a drawing board for engineering drawing. Back then, this is years. You know, and this is the same engineer who loves to dance. So anybody that sort of, if you say, oh, Lois is probably, oh, she's good in what she does, in class, people wonder, wait, is it the girl that dances? You mean she's an engineer? You know, people couldn't tell you the fact that you can have one talent and that can lead to the other. And this is the same person back in church. I used to do all the quizzes, on national level and zonal level. So the argument is that this should be somebody who is nerdy and walking in one path. But there were so many things that made me who I am, because everybody has a different story to tell our lives. And it was interesting. It wasn't the norm to hear that she's just engineering. Then what? So you see, what I'm trying to say is that I was regretting all those things back then because my parents didn't like it. My mom didn't feel like, and you come home early from rehearsal and blah, blah, blah. But until that started forming a story about what the daughter is, she started leaving me to do the things that I do. And so the underlining fact was the fact that anything I set my mind to do, I wanted to be best at it. So right now, there's a whole new big topic about science communication and how it should be communicated to the low public. Back then, who could have spoken about science communication? Or we know what we do among ourselves as academics. But now funding is moving towards having that narrative to be able to tell other people, the investors, what is their cycle now, like what's the sustainability of what you're doing. And a whole new different attitude is adding up to me. What am I saying? What I'm saying is that there were things that I was doing back then that I didn't really know that it would form part of the narrative that I do and people testify. So in whatever you're doing, get to do it. Now, my parents wanted me to do medicine, and that's the generic conversation. I know everybody on this panel would have that at some point, yeah, that your parents...
The monotony of Ghana.
You know, anyone that did science some way, somehow, you have to do medicine. Like our parents had that, you have to be a doctor and stuff like that. And I remember my daddy wanted me to be a pediatrician, specifically a child's doctor. And I wasn't good in biology. I was good in physics and chemistry. And I remember choosing medicine to go to the university. And the night before that, and this I had to tell them years after I did that, I changed my application because we work on the computerized system. So we had control. I changed and brought materials engineering on top because I had read that probably at nano level, you can fine tune a material. And that's where the world is going to be after 10 years. As to how, me, I don't know. Me, I just wanted to do it because I heard it some way from somebody somewhere and I changed it and I ended up in that field. And everybody was disappointed because to my parents, it was my fourth choice. How is a high-performing student having a fourth choice in education? What they didn't know was that I changed it. So this is me here having confessed, and my mom was like, you gave me hypertension back then. Oh, you're going to be fine. You will be fine. And making strides in that field. So as a young individual, you know, we are coming from probably now social media is changing a lot of things. There are things that are more visible. Visibility is having an effect. So we can see the young pilots, we can see the visibility of different careers. But back when we were growing, we didn't have that narrative. So some of our parents who are watching TVs are in the know-how of the outcome of these things. But so you have the advantage to yourself on this visibility and how you could maneuver your way as a young person in getting your career up. If I talk plenty, I'll lose track of my thoughts. Let me pass it.
You know, I'll just interrupt quickly because what Loy said is so important. It's one of the heartbreaking things in Ghana. You know, we don't give the young people the chance to explore other options. And I'm sure that Esther might talk about what is happening in Rwanda as well. It's probably similar. And Florentine might know that this is probably happening in Cote d'Ivoire as well or in Nigeria. I think especially in Nigeria. but this is so important. So thank you for emphasizing that. And I'm sure that Juliet and Dr. Onji and Florentine are also going to sort of hit on that as well, because I think it's killing a lot of dreams in Ghana. And I have a lot of respect for lawyers for making that bold step to change it. It's that is remarkable. I mean, I don't think there is anyone, I know anyone who would have done that. But kudos, really kudos. Dr. Onji, please tell us your story.
Okay, so I'll just add a little story to what Lois said and how she has to be grateful that, you know, there were no powers that be that would have still changed the back to medicine. So a friend told me a story of his friend who really wanted petroleum engineering, and, you know, his parents, I think his dad was former dean of pharmacy or something like that. They wanted him to do, was it either pharmacy? Yeah, I think they wanted him to do pharmacy, and he had no interest in pharmacy. So when he brought the forms and he wanted to fill it, the dad said, yeah, you should choose pharmacy and all of that. Guess what? I think the day before submission or something, he went to get another forms and filled it and chose petroleum engineering. And when the admissions came, he had pharmacy. He didn't choose pharmacy in any of it, but when the admissions came, he had pharmacy.
What a shock.
His dad had made him know that, you know, he had worked with
us. Oh my goodness.
But anyway, that's just the extent to which, you know, some parents want to force some programs on you. And I think sometimes they are doing it from a place of good intent. They feel that, you know, they know better, and, you know, pharmacy or especially the medical sciences are areas that you can easily get a job. I think they think more about job security, for example, when they think around those things. But it's important that we are in tune with what we like, are in tune with our interests, are in tune with even our strengths and weaknesses. So like Lois said, she didn't like biology. So if I don't like biology and you're forcing me into medical science, you're setting me up for failure. Okay, no matter how lucrative or no matter the job security in that field, my makeup is not best suited for that. And so I can't churn out the same results that, let's say, others who have interest in biology would. So that is the danger there, that we need to communicate with our parents on that. For me, it was interesting. So I think after the phase of everybody wanting to do medicine because you're doing science, and because you're a very good student. So if you're doing science and you're a very good student, you should do medicine. I think when I went to secondary school, whilst in secondary school, I don't know what happened, but that whole, you know, idea of medicine just, I don't know what happened, but it just, you know, went out of my head. And I became seriously curious about what's out there. I think the challenge is a lot of people, including our parents and even some of the young people today, don't know what else is out there. Our parents know, if your parents are not educated, they know a doctor because they've been sick and they've, you know, gone to a doctor before. So they know that, oh, you can become a doctor, and they see that it's prestigious. And so they can think of that. But your parents have not heard of anything like a materials engineer before. They don't know what they do. They don't know what industry, you know, they can work with and all of that. So their mind will not even go there. And when you try to tell them about that, it'll sound like, you know, something very abstract. So I think people are not exposed enough. It's important that, like Lois mentioned, visibility. Some of us who have gone through these non-traditional career paths share our stories on platforms like this, on our social media handles and all of that. So for me, I became curious to know what else is out there. And I started asking people questions. I didn't have the people in my family to ask them those questions because they are not educated. But, you know, I fell on friends and their families, friends from educated families. I had a friend whose sister was at KNUSD at the time doing environmental science. And this was a close friend. So I'll go to her house. I'll ask her sister a lot of questions. What's environmental science about? You know, what are some of the job prospects? When I finished secondary school, I went to do some computer skills training. And I met a guy there who was at Tech and was a petroleum engineering student. I was like, petroleum engineering, so you can work in oil industry. Okay, I think I want to work in that. But apart from that, what else is that out there? I want to be rich. and I asked the guy. The guy was like, oh, there is this program called Actuarial Science in KNUST. You know, you when you come out as an actuary, there are very few actuaries in Ghana. You know, I was like, wow, Actuarial Science. I went home, my church, everywhere was disturbing everybody with Actuarial Science, Actuarial Science, Actuarial Science. So that was how it was forming for me. I was asking people questions. Even when I go to the hospital, there was a time I even went to the hospital and I think the sonographer who was doing a scan and all of that, I was asking her, what do your friends do? You know, what did you do to be here doing this? Like, what kind of medical science is that? That was the extent to which I was curious. And so from all of that, I chose computer science because, you know, I had heard that computer science was, you know, going to boom and all of that. So I chose computer science at UCC. I chose computer science or actual science at Tech and chose environmental science as my second choice and got environmental science at Tech and got computer science at UCC. Then I started asking people questions again. So these two, what do you think? And all of that. And somebody said, oh, environmental science, you know, you can work in UN, you can do a lot of developmental projects and all of that. Computer science, this is. And I later decided to do environmental science and I'll tie it in with this. So talking about where we grew up, you know, at some point, I grew up mostly in compound houses, okay? And if you know the sanitation issues in compound houses, it's terrible. And there was a point that I actually we were staying in a house that you bath and then you go and pick the buckets of your own wastewater and you pour it somewhere. It was nasty.
Wow.
It was nasty. And sometimes if you don't check the bucket, if you don't check that the bucket is empty and you go and bath and let's say some unscrupulous tenant bath and left it there and you go and bath and, you know, it overflows and you have to pick it after bathing. Dear Lord, that was nasty. So I think those experiences, you know, also made me see the relevance of environmental sustainability or even wastewater treatment, which is what I do now. So all our experiences that we've experienced so far are not, and even now, is not really for now, it's for the future. So some of the things we went through, those experiences were not for then, they were for now. And whatever we are experiencing now is not for today, it's for the future. So I think that is how everything has tied in for me. Curiosity, asking people a bunch of questions and trying to also link it to my surroundings. And that is where I am now.
Wow. Wow. What a beautiful story. Wow. This is when we don't want it to end. Florentine, we want to hear from you too.
Wow. When you have these powerful women speaking before you, sometimes it's really it's really hard to share your story, but I really love your story. For me, I would say that Julia said something that whatever experiences we have then, it's not for then, but it is for now. Like whatever we had has influenced who we are today. I would say that, you know, moving from Ivory Coast at a very tender age to Nigeria, I learned to speak Yoruba within a month. So within a month, my parents realized that I could speak Yoruba very fluently, and in no time I could speak Igbo, and in no time I could speak Hausa. Don't ask me to speak it now, because right now...
That's happening here.
Right now, I haven't had people to speak it with for a long time, so the language has vanished. So I think at a tender age, my parents identified that I had a gift for languages, but because I was also a talkative, always disturbing my dad, he always said I was going to be a journalist. And I think he did that for all of us. We are six children. So he always identified something, a skill or something you're good at. And he keeps mentioning that that's what you're going to become. He said my younger sister was going to be a doctor. Then he said the others, some way, somehow, we all knew that he had big dreams for us. And he kept saying I was going to be a journalist. For me, he really wanted me to be a journalist because he felt that I had the oratory power, I had the communication skills, so I needed to do that. But as I grew up, I realized that I really had a love for languages. I just felt at ease when I could speak somebody's language. I felt that I could really go through the person. I could really relate to the person. And when we came back from Nigeria, it took me very little time to pick up French. We used to just do vacations at home because we were actually in a boarding house in Ghana. So we, during vacation, at that time, I think I was about nine years in a boarding school. So just when my dad knows that, oh, tomorrow is vacation, he would set off from Ivory Coast and then he'll come and pick us up from school and then we'll go back. So we'll spend about 1 month. After a month, I could speak French very fluently. And so that's influenced the rest of my life. So language came to me very naturally. So I felt that I wanted to do language education. And I realized that I loved to teach people. I loved to, anytime somebody came to me wanting to find out how to do something, I was always happy to, you know, teach the person. And I was like a spokesperson in the house. When my younger siblings could not go to my dad, they came through me. So I was always the one with a bad face. So anytime my dad wanted to get to me, he says, that's why I say you should do journalism, you know, do communication. So do communication. He was pushing me that when I go to the university, I should do communication. So when I was taking my forms for Legon, I chose English, French, Spanish, and theater. Those are the things I chose. I didn't choose anything near communication. So you should do communication. Wow. I said, no, I just want these areas, this language area. So I did that in Legon, did French, Spanish, and I finished with Spanish and then theater arts. And the interesting thing is that I loved Spanish because I just felt that thing in that language because it sounded so great. And then I loved the fact that I could speak another language. So, and then I realized that I was really good at it. And my supervisor felt, you should be a TA. And interestingly, I didn't get to do a year abroad. To be a TA, you have to do a year abroad. But I didn't do a year abroad, but I was still taken to be a TA. So.
Hello there, this is David from Post Production. So, Florence made mention of TA. TA is an abbreviation for teaching assistant, a common position for very brilliant and hardworking students in the university after they have finished their graduate program. Now let's go back into the conversation.
Then I stayed on as a TA. And those who did a year abroad came to meet me there and I was a TA of TA. It was really a very nice experience. They had the Spanish experience. I had a Ghana Spanish experience. Then I enrolled for a master's in Spanish because I realized that my interest in that area was really deep. After my first year, I was writing my paper for my dissertation to submit it. Then I came to the department one day and I was told that the head of department has been looking for you. Where are you? I said, why? What's going on? I went to say, there's a scholarship for China and you have been nominated for it. Now, mind you, at this time, I was going through a lot in my life. I was really struggling with a lot of things and I was struggling financially. I was struggling all my life. I've been struggling from one house to another, this challenge. And I'm always overcoming something. When would I really enjoy my life? So I kept saying that, no, I'm tired of this. Then when I heard that this would have been looking for me and this scholarship was supposed to be done in April, and I think that the deadline was about, I think it was around May. So it was around April. So I had about 8 hours to decide whether I wanted to go or not. So all I did was I took my phone, I called my dad, and I told my dad that I've gotten a scholarship to China and I'm taking it. And he said, China? How are you going to give the language when you get there? So if you want to go, let's go. So I think at that point, my dad realized that I could do anything. So I just took the challenge and then came to China. And like David said, within the first year, you have to learn the language. The first day in China was really an experience. So, but within 3 to 6 months, I realized I could speak very fluent Chinese, just like that. And so I made sure that I didn't lose my Spanish, I didn't lose my French. Now I've added Chinese to it. So I've always felt that this desire to reach out to people, you know, trying to connect with people. And I felt that language was one of the things to use to connect with people. So when I remember how my dad used to say that because of the way I talk and because of the way I should do journalism, and I look at the way my childhood experiences makes me feel that I always have to reach out to people to make them feel more comfortable. And one of the ways to do that was actually to speak their own language. I think it gave me that hunger. And in addition to that, God also gave me the gift to be able to pick up the languages very fast. So I ended up in China, and like Daniel did, after first year, I jumped into my master's degree, and it was crazy. It was like, I didn't learn any Chinese at all. So that has gotten me this far. And I want to say that most of the time, sometimes we don't see how the pieces are adding up together as young people. When we are going through life, we feel that our life is disjointed, like things are happening to us haphazardly and they are all disconnected. But the truth is, whatever choices we make, they actually always lead us to where we are currently in life. So it's one thing I would like to leave, that be cautious of the choices you make, whatever choices you make. Interestingly, where I'm working right now, people say that I'm not using my language, but it will amaze you. I'm working with Edify, and Edify is in 12 countries around the world, 7 in Africa and 5 in Latin America. Now, we get to meet once in a year globally where we have all the staff coming around. And it will amaze you that people always refer to the fact that I speak these languages, and they speak these languages with me because they know that I speak this language. And because of these languages, I get to really bond with a lot of people, especially those from Latin America. So it really matters the kind of choices you make in life. So that's, I think I'll just end here.
Wow. Before David comes in, I just want to make this point. You know, Florentine doesn't know this, but she's actually the one who inspired me to get interested in languages. We were in an international meeting, and then there had to be an announcement made. But people there, they were English speakers, French speakers, and Spanish speakers. And Florentine just took the mic, made announcements in English, goodness, French, Spanish, and Chinese flawlessly. It was just amazing, and the whole place was just clapping for her. It was just amazing, and when I saw that, I was like, that is what I want to do, you know. and then I started looking for language tutorials, you know, and I've been studying that, really, because of you. I've been studying that, and even today I'm still practicing my Spanish and French on Duolingo.
Wow, that is so cool.
It's flawless. Like, I love languages. I love French to the extent that back in JHS, my French teacher used to call me professeur and all of that. and it just vanished. You know, there's a space where science, you don't add any other thing. So they just cut us off. But think about it. We are surrounded by French-speaking countries. And we would want to jump to Togo and Benin and be friends with Nigeria because they speak English. We are media border, we cannot even express ourselves with them. So how are we trading? How are we doing all that? Like, I've just been thinking about it lately, and Florentine has just, you know, honestly, if you're listening to this podcast, like, the way she's smiling through it, you can't believe that Spanish can come out of her mouth. So, Florentine, you need to drop
I think before we finish this session, she's supposed to, you know, say something in all the languages.
No, but I'm surprised you people are rather admiring, you know, what the language is. But
I actually adore women who have brains
like you do. I mean, in the engineering and in the sciences, it's amazing. Something I couldn't do. I had to pray, fast and pray to pass my science. Seriously, in SHS, I fasted and prayed. And I said, God, you let me pass it. Just let's once.
I can't also do what you're doing. I mean, I'm terrible with languages. So I work with a French company for my national service technique, and we were supposed to learn French. We had somebody from Alain Francais come in, and oh God, it was, you know, entering and going at the same rate. So
and to think of the fact that she has a compartmentalized brain for Spanish here, French here, Chinese.
I don't know how you do it. Like, flesh and blood did not reveal this one.
Preach. Wow, this is.
It just shows that we are all very unique.
Yeah.
And
God has really given each one of us a very good gift.
I'm glad that, you know, listeners who are in humanities or who are not in sciences get to see the importance of, you know, languages, or even in broader extent, any area you find yourself, it is relevant. You know, we don't all get up and go to the hospital in a day. Some go to hospitals, some go to catering or go to restaurants, some go to fuel stations, there's so many activities we do in a day as human beings. And that should tell us that there are so many professionals, different professionals needed for each day to run smooth. And so we all don't need to go to the sciences. We all don't need to become engineers. We all just need to flourish in that skill that we have. I love this. Thank you so much.
Now, hold that thought right there. As we were just engaging and enjoying the talents of language and all that, we are going to bring you the rest of the conversation where we dive more into what a successful career is and what you should know in bridging the gap right after school and transitioning into the professional life. This is an episode you don't want to miss, so stick around with us, and we are coming your way again next week. Thank you for listening.